Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Our next guest, one of the nicest, most informed people in sports media. NFL Network anchor, formerly with the Pac-12 Network, graduate of Fordham University. Like, Fordham University's got some alumni, right? Vince Lombardi. PJ Carlissimo. Denzel Washington. Yeah, Denzel Washington. Alan Alda. Fordham University. Guess who else is a Fordham grad? Mike Yam, NFL Network, joining us now. Do you hang out? Do you get to hang out with, like, Denzel and, you know, other people?
I don't even know how to respond to this. First of all, greatest intro of all time. You got Sussman saying that this is going to be a fun interview. So he already sets the plate that I need to bring it. Then you drop a Fordham reference. I get Denzel. You missed Vin Scully. By the way, the list of people that you just mentioned, I should not be on that same list. But if you're to answer your question, I'm telling you right now, I would be the happiest person ever if I could shoot some hoops with Denzel. That would be amazing. That would be amazing. He was on the basketball team, quit to go do acting at Fordham.
What a bum. Gave up his basketball career for a dead-end acting job.
Seriously. Oh, God. You know, what could have been? He could have been, you know, doing the killer crossover, matching up against AI and all those dudes. Instead, you know, King Kanye got you-know-what on me. So, here we go.
Let me ask you, because we have talked before about your story, your family of origin, you know, how the sacrifices that were made, you know, by your parents who really escaped poverty in Hong Kong and got you here and got you set up for the career that you have now had and the education that you got at Fordham. Like, when you were at Fordham, did you think about the sacrifices that, you know, parents and grandparents had made?
You know, I wish, John, I could answer that I was mature enough in those moments as a 21-year-old. Like, I wasn't a bad kid. I was a good kid. You know, I didn't really get in trouble. But I don't think it was until after I graduated that some of that stuff started to have a little bit more of an effect. And I actually remember taking a car ride downtown Manhattan and Lower East Side. And I vividly remember this. I was in the car with my dad. And he had said to me, he's like, hey, actually, two blocks from here, we had a one-bedroom, actually, it was a one-bedroom apartment. He's like, I shared, you know, the apartment with, you know, my Aunt Mary and then, you know, basically his siblings and then my grandparents. And, you know, one-bedroom apartment, you're talking about four or five people living in that one bedroom, not a whole lot of resources. And I think in that moment, it clicked because, you know, the weekend before, I was down there hanging out with my friends at, like, this really nice restaurant. And here it is, like, you know, fast forward, I guess, all these years later, and I have the opportunity to go and have those resources. My dad didn't have really supportive teachers and mentors. Like, that just didn't exist. I sort of joke, and I don't mean it in a malicious way, but sometimes it's like, I don't know if my dad knows how to have fun, because his whole life was always like, hey, got to go and work, and, you know, we need the extra cash and all those types of things. So to your point, I wish I was a little bit more mature younger to have that stuff resonate a little bit more, but it's definitely not lost on me now, and my appreciation level is really high.
My wife, you know, her mother escaped communist China and went to Taiwan with her family, and she remembers being a kid and being in a boat and hearing gunfire, and, you know, they were getting out of Dodge. You have just this amazing story and a letter that your mother or grandmother wrote to Robert Kennedy, you know, begging him basically not to deport your grandfather from the United States. I mean, they were chasing the American dream.
Yeah, totally a different time. And I remember you writing about your wife's journey and just thinking about all the people in this country who have had similar paths, right? Where you know, I mean, how lucky are we? John, when I was at Pac-12 Network, one of the coolest things I got to do, and I loved it, was to go and talk to students at our universities. And it was, I used to start all these talks, and I was just doing it, and I didn't think about it until after the fact, but I always started like, hey, you're not going to find a luckier broadcaster than me. Like, I just think about all these opportunities that I've had, and you just get to work with guys I used to watch play and coaches who have this great acumen. You mentioned PJ Carlisle, another Fordham guy. PJ is the best. You know, you get these experiences, and I just think to myself, man, how fortunate I am. But why am I fortunate? Because I was born here. Like, I had these opportunities. And, you know, I think about people who aren't in the same situations that I was fortunate enough to be in. And, like, why are they unlucky? Because they, you know, geographically, they just, you know, they were born in a place that just doesn't have the resources that we have here in our country. I mean, it really is incredible. That's why, you know, I think we talk about Ukraine and, you know, some of the refugees there. I mean, it's heartbreaking. We've seen the images and the videos, and it's gut-wrenching to see some of that stuff. You know, I've been pretty vocal about Asian hate and some of the things that have been happening in the communities, you know, in places where I used to live, like New York, for example, or San Francisco before I came down to LA. It's hard. And John, I don't need to tell you, obviously your wife is of Asian descent, so I'm sure she's sensitive to a lot of the things that are happening, and you're sensitive to it as well. But it's really sad. And I just, you know, I think if we just net out it, hey, like, can we just do the right thing? And, you know, how do you position yourself and think about someone else and the things that they're going through? You know, the bad days, the challenges that they're facing. I think a lot of times we don't spend enough time thinking about other people because we're worried about ourselves. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I don't mean to sound like you're selfish because you think about yourself. I mean, you got to take care of yourself. But at the same time, that level of empathy needs to be there. And I think we'd all be in a better situation if that was the case.
Mike Yam, NFL Network, is with us. You know, before I move on to football, because now I'm on this family of origin stuff and I'm fascinated by it, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the story kind of goes that Grandpa was on a ship. He came to the United States. He was supposed to be here and then ship out. He went AWOL and then got jobs, odd jobs in restaurants, and like immigration was looking for him. You know, the Chinese government said he's a communist. You know, they're trying to get him, you know, get the United States to play ball there. And Grandpa was on the lam for a while.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were times when he was, you know, washing dishes in a Chinese restaurant and immigration officials would come. He'd hightail it in the back, jump in the dumpster. You know, I think about some of those stories, man, just tough as nails. You know, I just think about the experiences that my dad had, right? Like, my dad was young. He's the oldest of the group of his siblings, but, you know, like, he didn't have like his dad around for years because, you know, as my grandfather was trying to get citizenship and save money to bring everyone here to the States, like, here it is, my grandmother, you know, with my aunts and uncles and my dad living, you know, sort of in a one bedroom, you know, place in Hong Kong. And my dad would tell me, he's like, you know, we didn't have a lot of protein in our diet. He said it was like a big thing, like when we could have chicken, for example. He's like, it was a ton of, like, it makes me sad, honestly. Like, you think about people that you care about in those situations. It's not always the easiest thing. And, you know, to hear some of those stories. And, you know, then he comes once again to the States after my grandfather had saved some money. It's kind of crazy. Like, he was working in a lot of those Chinese restaurants and then was able to save enough after, you know, he had brought my grandmother and my aunts and uncles here to the States. You know, he saved enough and was able to open up his own restaurant. And it was in a bad area of New York, and they had gotten robbed a couple times. And at one point, my aunt had, you know, they had gotten robbed, and she was, you know, held at gunpoint for all the money in the register. And at that point, they sort of realized, like, hey, we can't keep this place. We have to move on. So my dad always says, it's like, the only time I ever saw your grandfather, meaning his dad, ever cry was when he had to go and close that restaurant. Like, I just think about those types of moments. And then here it is, John, like, I get to, even tomorrow's the draft. Like, right. I talk football for a living. Like, how crazy is that? Like, I'm not digging ditches. Like, we're like, is this work? Like, sometimes I just think to myself, my God, like, you know, they would laugh if they've seen, you know, they've since passed, but if they saw sort of my path and how fortunate I am, I know they'd be thrilled for me, for sure. And happy that I'm doing something that I love, but I can't help but think they'd be like, this is an actual job. Like, you do this for a living. And here it is. Like, you know, I get these opportunities.
I think it's fantastic. And I think, you know, they probably, when Grandpa was, you know, getting off that ship, You know, if somebody would have told him, hey, your grandkid's going to be on the NFL Network one day talking about the draft, he would say, what I'm doing right now is worth it.
Worth it, yeah. Yeah, I mean, just that sacrifice, man, for my dad, my aunts, and my uncles, you know, to have a better situation, because it wasn't great. You know, a lot of poverty where they grew up in Hong Kong. And, you know, like, you know, my dad, you know, got to go to college, and he's, you know, had a successful career in the science, you know, field as a cytologist, you know, which is the study of cells. And he's been working in hospitals. And it just, it's pretty wild, just sort of the advancements that, I don't know. My dad's probably not working in a hospital as a cytologist, you know, analyzing cells after you get your blood drawn. If, you know, if it's not for some of those sacrifices from my grandfather, I know that just wouldn't have happened.
Amen to that. Mike Yam with us, NFL Network anchor. The draft tomorrow, as you point out, help us out here. Where's your mind as this thing starts? What are you going to be most curious to see go down?
Quarterbacks. I know everyone keeps talking about that number one pick. Is it Walker? Is it Hutchinson? It feels like things are swinging more towards the Walker side of things, which is a little surprising. For what it's worth, on NFL.com, if Hutchinson, John, doesn't go one, he's going two on those mocks. And in the mocks where Hutchinson goes one, Walker's kind of, I mean, I'll use the air quotes around falling, but he's going to four. So I think there's a little bit of a love fest in Jacksonville with regard to that top spot. But to me, this is still all quarterback driven. And everyone keeps talking about the class not being great, and I don't necessarily disagree with it. But I find it hard to believe there's not going to be some teams desperate to try to make a push to grab one. You know, Carolina, we had a report today on NFL Network. They might even be thinking about defense in that sixth spot. And I'm thinking to myself, really? Like, Sam Darnold's your guy? All well and good. And I hope Sam, you know, has success and he's given another opportunity. And if McCaffrey's healthy, that changes the dynamic of that football team. But I'm fascinated by, A, how many quarterbacks go in the first round, and B, who's the first one to go? Because you might think Pickett is the guy that's most ready. Willis might have the most upside. I think Desmond Ridder should be in that conversation because he's a straight-up winner. You know, the guy's been in college for 6 years. He wins a ton of games. He's super mature. He's a girl dad, right? He's already got a kid. Like, I think there's stuff like that in situations like that, I should say, where it just becomes, to me, the most intriguing storyline of this draft.
Kayvon Thibodeau is a big discussion point here, and it's divided people.
Yeah.
And I think you can simultaneously say, guy's really disruptive, he's a great pass rusher, but you're not sure what he's going to be at the next level. We're not sure really about any of these guys. How big of a risk is Thibodeau in your mind?
Wow, John, you know, it's a great question. For as much as the mocks have been going back and forth on Walker and Hutchinson, I almost feel like I've been going back and forth on Kayvon. I was there in Eugene for his pro day, and I think he did a lot of really good things. I don't know if he necessarily silenced some of the critics about the motor and how, you know, energized he is and how much he loves football. Like, I don't know if he solved that on his pro day. But yesterday, I was at NFL Network yesterday, and Thibodeau actually came on our show. He was in studio. I got to spend just a couple minutes with him in the green room. And even on set, I got to tell you, like, he's the type of kid who I think doesn't get credit for smart as he is. I think he almost gets dinged for having an opinion, which I don't think is necessarily fair. And a couple of our guys made a really good point. You know, it's sort of a culture. And I was around Cristobal. You were around Cristobal on that team a ton. So you probably even have a better, I know you have a better handle on it than I do. Mario never struck me as a guy that said, hey, we're ever going to give up on a play. But there is an identity around some of this stuff where, do you go 100% every single play? Like, I think most NFL guys would tell you. I mean, hell, the guys that I was working on set today with, they said it. Like, you do kind of take off. Like, it's not 100% every play, as much as we'd like to think that. You can look at the film and some of those things, but I think what's really at the crux of this is Kayvon could have shut it down last season, and he didn't, and he still played pretty well. And a couple of years ago, you know, we could have been talking about him as the number one overall pick. He was a top high school kid, before he committed to the Ducks. I just think some of the criticism is not totally fair, and I would not be surprised if he goes to Detroit, and I don't think he falls past New York at five if he's there. I think the Giants still would rather an offensive tackle, and maybe it's Evan Neal, maybe it's Kongu, but I think at the end of the day, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau, look, Joe Shane was there, their assistant general manager, who's also a Fordham guy. He was in Eugene there. Like, they were there to watch Kayvon, so I know he's in the mix, and obviously they got two picks in that top seven.
It's this is a day that we all will look back on years from now, and we will go, okay, you know, who are the winners, who are the losers? It seems to be that there are some teams that just draft really well or make good decisions. I want to ask you a little bit about some of the players that are unsettled right now, like a Deebo Samuel and maybe some other guys. Do you anticipate some trades that could shake up the first round?
Yeah, you know, the Deebo conversation is intriguing because I think every team that needs a wide receiver, and there's a few of them right now, look to this draft and say, there's a guy that might be able to help us out right now. But then you see Deebo, and you say to yourself, that's a game changer who's a known commodity who is not happy and we could go and get. I think the asking price for John Lynch, who's their general manager in San Francisco, I think that's pretty high right now. I think the value, you know, our guys, the analytics, the people, they'll tell you it's about the worth of a 13th overall pick. But Ian Rappaport, we had him on our show today, and Ian made a really good point. Like, the clock is ticking here. Doing a deal and a trade for Deebo is not the easiest thing considering the timing. A, he's got to take his physical. B, you got to work out a contract. You have to go and pay him. And then the compensation has to be right. Not impossible, but there's some moving pieces here that do make it challenging. And there's a part of me that almost wonders, like, hey, if it doesn't happen at some point later this evening / in the morning, I don't know if it necessarily does, but I think any team that needs a wide receiver, there's some gems. One of those guys we saw a ton in Drake London out of USC, but there's some wide receivers here who really can be difference makers.
Mike Yam, NFL Network, is with us. I'm excited to see this draft. I'm excited to see what happens. Yeah. It's always intriguing. How much has the conversation around maybe the top 10 picks changed in the last couple of weeks on your shows?
Yeah, a fair amount. I think a lot of the names stayed the same, but the positions on the board have done some movement. The edge kid, Johnson kid out of Florida State, his name seems like it's rising a fair amount. He was an ACC Defensive Player of the Year. This is a strong edge class, so it's sort of like, you know, eye of the beholder, so to speak. Like, who do you really like among some really talented players? But generally speaking, I think the biggest surprise recently, not only Johnson, but today, we had enough conversations off air with some of our reporters where I'm almost starting to think, like, is Drake London going to be the first wide receiver off the board? Now, I don't know if I would have said that a couple weeks ago. The Garrett Wilson out of Ohio State, Chris Olave, another Ohio State kid, I don't think it would have been Olave. I think it would have been Wilson. There's some names getting floated, but it seems like Drake's name keeps popping up. So my money wouldn't have been on him being the first guy. It probably would have been one of the first three wide receivers, but I'm starting to think there might be a run of wideouts, which is really important too, John, from a contract perspective. You get your first round guy, you get those rights for 5 years, and look no further than Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, Deebo when he's about to get paid. Like, these deals for these wide receivers are massive now. So if you can get one of these dudes, you know, like a Jamar Chase, for example, and they can ball out for you early, you hold those rights for, you know, an extra year. Like, that's a huge advantage for these teams.
Before I cut you loose, Yam, Jimmy Garoppolo, has been bantered about since the end of the season. What happens with Garoppolo, or what's the trade value right now for that guy?
I don't think the trade value is super high for two reasons. One, the shoulder injury. So he'll be throwing in June, and that will certainly help. But I think the other thing is his value goes up as this thing goes on. Like, Father Time's undefeated here. So if one of these teams who needs a wide or needs a quarterback can't get the one that they like in the draft, Jimmy's value goes up for that team. And to me, we could see an injury. There could be sort of a desperation move. And I think, you know, if I was a general manager or a head football coach, and my options for a veteran to come in are Baker or Jimmy, which guy do you want, John? I mean, out the door in Jimmy's last game, I felt like every player on that roster was vocal on social media doing their interviews, praising and raving about Jimmy Garoppolo on that team. Couldn't have handled the Trey Lance situation better. I don't want to knock Baker Mayfield, but at the end of the day, you know, he was upset asking for a trade when the Browns were just talking to Deshaun Watson. So I think Jimmy's value is higher than Baker's, but I think it's going to be even higher as the days unfold here.
Mike Yam, NFL Network. All right, where will you be as part of the coverage tomorrow so people tuning in can look for you?
Yeah, draft day. I'm actually doing our digital draft show. I just got assigned to that a couple weeks ago. So it's my first time hosting an NFL draft. I'm not in the big chair like Rich Eisen, but this is going to be fun. It's on NFL.com. We got guys covered, too, on like Peacock and some of these other fast channels. So it'll be a ton of fun and a lot of drama because that's what the draft is. It feels like a little bit of a lull right now, John, but you've been in this business for a long time. You know draft day comes around, there's going to be some chaos.
Yeah, it's been nuts, too, when you're just seeing the money that's going to the wide receivers and certainly the value on some of the pass rushers. All right, over, under on Kayvon Thibodeau. If we put the line at the 6.5, is he in the top six picks or is he after seven?
No. He's top six. I was worried you were going to tell me the line was at 3.5. And then I'd be like, ooh, I don't know. I still think he's in the top four, though. I don't think he falls past the Jets. I don't think he's outside the top six. I think Thibodeau's going to be a happy guy. And I think the franchise that gets him is going to be happy with the edge and the versatility and the skill that he's going to bring them.
Mike Yam, NFL Network, I appreciate you. Keep up the fight.
Yeah, you're the best, man. I always appreciate the invite. Enjoy the draft.
There he is, the pride of Fordham, Denzel Washington, Mike Yam, Vince Lombardi, all Fordham University grads, among others. It's a long cast of characters. He says Thibodeau in the top four. I'd be a little concerned, but we'll find out tomorrow, and you'll find out right here on this radio show. We'll have the draft live. Anna's popped into the studio. Much more ahead.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, it's not a secret that despite the fact that I have been in sports media and around sport events for like 30 years, and had a childhood where I was at a lot of ballparks. I was in a lot of stadiums. It's almost a statistical anomaly that I have never caught a foul ball at a baseball game. It almost defies logic. But then you start thinking about it. And in my defense, let me just tell you, it's not like I've dropped foul balls at games. They've just never been hit in my vicinity. When I was a kid, we'd be inside stadiums and we always sat kind of in the cheap seats at the stadium, so it would take a monster foul ball to get to the second deck of Candlestick Park, and it would take a big-time home run to get to the upper deck out in the outfield. So I never really had opportunities, okay? Balls were never hit my way is what I'm saying. And then as a media member, I'm in the press box, for crying out loud. It's a rare thing to get a foul ball in the press box. Anna popped into the studio during the commercial break, and she leads with, did you see the super dad who caught the foul ball while feeding the baby a bottle? You are attacking my sports fandom manhood, Anna, by saying this guy was feeding a baby at a baseball game. Apparently he was at the Reds-Padres game, and a foul ball was hit, and this fan makes the catch of the year while feeding the baby a bottle. This caught your eye?
It did, because he was multitasking. And the mom of the baby, I'm presuming it's the mom of the baby who's sitting next to him, it's her reaction that I especially love, because he so casually reaches up and catches it while he's bottle feeding the baby. And she...
What does she do?
She lifts both hands in the air to try and give him like an air 10.
Yeah.
Like, that was just her instantaneous reaction. But the reality is that he's got still the bottle in one hand in the baby's mouth and the baseball in his right hand, so he can't really, like, high-ten her. It's just really funny.
This game's in Cincinnati. Here it is. Here's the call as we're in the top of the fifth inning. Two runners on and a 1-0 pitch at the plate.
El Paso, after Luke Voit went on the injured list, bicep soreness, pops it up. Nice job. Wow, feeding the baby. Wow. Holds the bottle, no spillage, baby in perfect bliss and a souvenir. Nice.
I love a couple of reasons here. By the way, fan in front of him in the row tried to catch the thing. I got to give Dad credit. It took immense concentration. I got to give credit to the baby, too. The baby's in a baby Bjorn. It's in that little backpack satchel thing that you wear on the front if you're a dad or a mom and you got your baby. The baby is facing the field, not facing towards Dad. So the baby's got like a view of the field. Bottle in baby's mouth. Dad's using the left hand to put the bottle in the baby's mouth. And with the right hand, he never leaves his seat. He does not stand up. He just reaches up and snags the foul ball. Good for him.
I love, too, that the dad, Jacob Kingsley is his name.
Wow.
He says that safety was the main thing on his mind while he was making that catch. He said he saw the ball pop up. He just wanted to keep the baby happy. It's a boy. So he says he did his best to protect him at the same time. He reached the hand up. He had some fierce competition, as you're alluding to there, but it ended up just fine. And I put the baby first.
I actually got to give the fan in front of him some credit because a lot of fans in that situation get a little overzealous. They get out of their row.
Yeah.
I don't think you should be allowed to leave your row to get a foul ball at a game.
Really?
Yeah. You should not be able to go into the aisle. You should not be able to hop back a row and get in someone else's lap to try to catch the ball. You should not be able to go forward.
Yeah, but oftentimes a foul ball goes into the stands where nobody's sitting.
That's different. That's different. I'm talking about when you're in an area where other fans are sitting.
Yeah.
You should not be able to leave like more. You should not be able to go more than 3 feet to your left, right. You should not be able to leave your row back or fro. Okay? Those are the rules.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Yeah.
If you are at a game and there's a home run hit and it's so high up that it's not really realistic for you to throw it back onto the field. I'm like, you get to keep that ball, right?
You keep the ball.
You just
keep
the ball.
Yeah, Anna, they don't need you to throw the ball back to play the game.
No, I know that. I know that.
They have a whole bucket of balls. you know, they can afford it. Okay.
No.
Excuse me, ma'am. We need the ball back.
Never mind. I regret. Although, I withdraw the question, Your Honor.
So what's the question?
That was the question. It was just I haven't been to that many Major League Baseball games.
Oh Lord, she married a sports writer, folks.
I know. So I wasn't sure what the protocol is because
you
have seen fans give the ball back.
Yeah, they throw it back. Like visiting home teams hit a home run in Chicago, they will throw the ball back. Like, we don't even want your home run.
Oh, it's a rejection.
They throw it onto the field.
Disrespect thing, yeah.
Yes.
So a fan in that case, if it's the opposing team's home run, is it bad form for them to keep it?
Yes. The fans will
even
boo.
Even if it's like a little kid?
They'll boo and give them a hard time. And a lot of fans will bring an extra ball to the game. So if the fans boo, they throw back the fake baseball they brought to the game. They keep the home run ball. So they'll fake out the other fans.
This is helpful knowledge.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
In fact, I saw a video recently of a kid at a game who caught a ball and then threw back. Oh, no. He caught a ball. And then he turned and gave – he was a kid, like 12, 13 years old.
Yeah.
He turned and seemingly gave the ball to a 20-something-year-old girl who was sitting in the row behind him. And everybody is like, oh, what a move. Like, what a Valentine he is. What a charmer he is to give that ball away to an attractive young lady who's sitting in the area. And then they slowed it down.
Yeah.
The kid actually caught the foul ball and then reached back and handed her a ball that was not the ball he caught. So he was giving her the substitute ball. So it was a smooth move. See, he didn't give up anything. Like, it's probably just some old ball that his dog was chewing in the garage.
Yeah.
And there
I
you
see.
Go.
Okay.
That's the way to do it. Here's the thing that happened, though, in 2004 at the Olympics. I was covering the Athens Olympics.
Uh-huh.
And I was at baseball. Now, they don't do baseball in Greece.
Yeah, it's not a big sport there.
It's just not their thing.
Not a national pastime.
No, they were in no hurry whatsoever, the Greeks.
Well, that's the Greeks. Like, yeah? You got to love the Greeks.
Well, even the Olympic Stadium, the morning of the opening ceremonies, it wasn't done.
Yeah.
They were still painting it that morning.
Yeah.
And
finishing touches on.
But I was like asking people that were native there in Athens. I was like, are you guys worried?
Uh-huh.
And they were like, no, we'll get it done. No big deal. Like, but they're going to live a long time. I can tell you these Greeks are going to live forever.
Yeah.
because they take a nap during the day. They go siesta.
Right.
And they, you know, they just, nothing's a big deal.
Yeah.
They underreact to everything.
Well, it's the home of Plato and Aristotle, so,
you know. We could learn something from that.
They have a long-range view of things. So what happened at the baseball
game?
We ought
to be quoting those people, is what I'm saying.
We ought to,
so,
yeah.
Here's what happened. So I go, you know, I tell my editor I'm going to go to what is the first organized baseball game being played in Athens ever.
Mm-hmm.
They had no baseball field prior to the Olympics. It did not exist.
Wow, okay.
They did not have a diamond.
Okay.
So they built a baseball field on a tarmac in Athens.
Really?
They built a whole baseball field.
Okay.
Now, the host country gets a team in every event.
Yeah.
You don't have to qualify.
Yeah.
If you're the host.
Okay.
So the Greeks had teams in everything in that Summer Olympics.
Yeah.
They weren't any good in some of the sports, but it gives you a home team to root for.
Right.
Okay. So the Greeks didn't have a baseball team, nor do they have youth baseball. They don't do baseball.
Yeah.
So what they did is they went and they found Americans who were of Greek heritage.
Of course.
And they said, and they found minor league players.
Yeah.
And they said, hey, do you want to come play on behalf of your homeland? Like your great-grandfather immigrated to the United States.
Right.
You could play for Greece.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah. So a whole team of people with five-syllable last names.
Yeah, but they were all Americans.
Right.
Who were all minor league players.
Right.
So they're playing for Greece.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to this baseball game. It's the first ever game. It was like, I vaguely remember, I think it was Cuba or some Latin country against the Greeks.
Some country that actually knew baseball.
Yes. First inning, I'm on press row, very first batter, second pitch of the game, foul ball is hit. Okay?
Yeah.
Routine foul ball.
Right.
Fan, who's Greek, catches the ball.
Yeah.
And then does what you think, thinks they need the ball back in order to continue the game.
Right.
So he's waving the ball, trying to get the attention of the players. Nobody's looking at him because they're like, foul ball, where's the next ball?
Yeah.
He throws the ball back onto the field. Everybody starts laughing. The players are laughing. Media members are laughing.
Uh-huh.
And they had to explain it. They threw it back to him and they said, we don't need it. We have more.
Yeah.
Like, you get to keep that. That's part of being at the thing. Now, I'm gathering that, like, in soccer.
Yeah, that's my next question.
They don't get to keep the
ball. That's a good segue, because I want to know about soccer now. If the ball goes out of bounds in soccer, does the fan get to keep the ball? Because surely, you
got to give it back.
Really?
Yeah, you got to give it back. And football, too. If a ball goes in the stands, security will come and get it from you.
Okay, but here's
the only exception to that is if, like, a player will hand it up to a kid in the stands, then the player ends up getting billed for the ball.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Really?
Yes.
Remember when Mike Evans gave away Tom Brady's 500th touchdown pass?
Yeah, and they had to get it back. But
there's so many unspoken rules here, because if it's just a matter of cost, I mean, surely the NFL or the two teams involved that are playing, or in soccer, the teams can afford another ball.
Yeah.
So it's just that different sports have different protocols.
Yeah, but you don't get fined for giving a ball away in the NFL. The fine for throwing a ball into the stands is $7,210. I don't know why that is. $7,210 for the first
That's
offense.
That's a very specific number.
If you throw
number.
Or kick the ball into the stands, $7,210 for your first offense. Second offense is $12,360, okay?
That's so funny.
The NFL's weird.
It is weird.
Is that a tax write-off, too?
I don't know.
Can you imagine the committee that was formed to determine that number? Those are very specific numbers.
Now, players will sometimes give away a ball to a fan, as Mike Evans did in the thing. But they generally just get billed for the ball, and I think it's like $600 or $800, which is not the cost of a ball. But they don't get fined for that amount. Now, I have been in the press box and sat next to the NFL has somebody whose job it is.
Yeah.
There's the officials on the field.
Right.
Then they have an observing official.
Yes.
Then they have another official up in the press box for NFL games that is looking at players' uniforms.
Okay.
If their socks are not pulled down up to the right height, if their shirt's not in
like
the right
regulation.
Thing, it has to be regulation.
Okay.
And I've sat next to that guy numerous times at different stadiums, and he has a little notepad, and he'll be like, I can remember back in the day I was covering the Niners game, I think it was against the Packers at Candlestick Park, and the guy was like, Terrell Owens sock violation, and this was in the pregame. He was watching him warm up.
Okay.
You can't even be on the field in the pregame and have your socks down. And he got Terrell Owens for having his socks down.
Does Terrell Owens get fined for that?
Yes, that's a fine.
Even in a pregame?
Because it's a uniform violation. You get fined.
Wow.
So the players have to have standard, you know, socks pulled up, you know, uniform.
That guy's a lot of fun. Yeah.
He's usually a retired official, and he's generally a nice human being who is there writing in pencil on a legal notepad, taking money away from NFL players as the game goes
on. I want to know more about that guy. How'd you get that job?
By the way, in 2015, Cam Newton got fined $253,000.
Whoa, for what?
Because he gave away footballs to fans during games. So they went back, and this was, they looked at, you know, every time he gave a ball away, he had to pay for it, okay?
Yeah.
If you throw the ball or kick the ball, you get fined. So Cam Newton, from 2011 to 2015, had to pay $253,000.
Oh my
for all the
gosh.
Balls that he gave away to fans.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, like A.J. Brown one time threw, like a couple seasons ago, threw a ball into the stands after scoring a touchdown.
Yeah.
$12,000.
Wow.
There you go.
See, in the NBA, if the ball goes out of bounds, it always goes back. Nobody ever gets to keep that either.
Yeah.
So baseball's kind of in its own category then.
So
really.
You say. So you say, Anna. So you say, if you're at a game and you catch a ball, I'm going to wrestle it away from you. I'm not allowing you to throw it back onto the field.
Well, that'll be really entertaining on the Jumbotron.
Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this couple is fighting over the foul ball.
That would be the opposite of that charming scene with the dad and the baby and the mom.
It would be, instead of super dad, it would be super bad. Leave it here. You got the BFT.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.